This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Jonathan. Well, it's good to be with you this afternoon. I know the some of the topics that I have here at Reach, when people show up, it's because they are either interested in a very small subsector of ministry. You know, they're the bookkeepers, the guys that are crunching the numbers. Most of the other people, they ask, it's an interesting conversation. So, oh, you have a workshop. So what's the title of your workshop? And I tell them, and their eyes just kind of glaze over. And say, yeah, they won't be attending. So anyway, it's good to see there are some of you here today. So three questions that I would say I've probably been asked the most as an accountant as I've interacted with not-for-profits. One of them actually was a call from a deacon in a church, and he said, you know, we have a lady in our church whose husband left her. She has several children. It actually was I think she's a sister to the deacon, and so it made the situation even a little more touchy. How do I handle this? You know, there's only kind of conflict of interest with the family as well. But We have this lady and her family in our church. There's people outside of our church that would like to give to her. How do we do that? Can we do that? Okay, so that's one question. Another question is, we have someone in our church who would like to give a gift to an individual in our church, but of course would like a charitable donation receipt if possible. Can I run that through the church? And the church just helps them? Because, I mean, it's a part of the role of the church is to assist those in need, right? So, you know, it makes sense. You would just run it through the church and you get a donation receipt. The third question that I'm frequently asked is, so we have missionaries on the field who are raising their own support. Of course, you know, the donors send in their check with the name of the missionary in the memo field. Can we give them a receipt for that? How's that work? Okay, so those are three questions that we're going to be looking at. I'll be outlining some definitions. We'll get into some definitions and some concepts that kind of will help to guide our thinking as we look at these questions. And then I'll come back to these three questions, and we will I'll give my opinion on them. I've heard that in the realm of tax and accounting, most answers are supposed to begin with, well, generally. You know, and then you go from there. So, one size doesn't fit all. But, some definitions. Restrictions. So, the title for the talk talks about designations. I'll actually be using the word restrictions during most of the talk. Designated donations has a sort of a ring to it and a title, but frankly, in the accounting literature, most of the time, restrictions is what people talk about, restricted funds versus unrestricted funds. What are restrictions? Restrictions are a legally binding instruction from the donor. These restrictions typically are temporary. They can be permanent. So what do I mean by temporary and permanent? Well, temporary restrictions are either for a project, so you're building a particular project and you know, you're doing a fundraising drive for this, and the donor says, yes, I want to give for this project. So there, it is restricted for a project. On the other hand, you can have donations that are restricted for a time frame. So the donor donates money and says, I would like this money to be used over the next 5 years. I'd like you to use a certain portion of it for the next 5 years. Or I'd like for you to use interest only for the next 20 years, and then after that you can begin to take maybe a portion of the principal and so forth. So there's a variety of restrictions that can go with donations. But these are legally binding instructions from a donor. There can also be permanent restrictions. And what do I mean by permanent restrictions? Most often seen in endowments, for example, where the principal actually cannot be touched. Only the earnings on the principal can be touched. Most of our ministries probably don't have permanently restricted donations, but it, yeah, definitely does occur. Previously, if you have an annual audit, the previous language on the audit required you to break out temporarily restricted net assets, permanently restricted net assets, and then unrestricted net assets. There's been some changes recently where the new language is now net assets with donor restrictions, net assets without donor restrictions. Why the change in language? The governing board was concerned that when people see unrestricted net assets, they think, oh, good, these are the net assets that can be used for any purpose that the organization has. That might not be the case. There are what's called board designations. So the board might restrict funds to a certain cause. And so they changed the wording so that the donors can clearly see this refers to donor restrictions, not overall restrictions. So just because they don't have a donor restriction does not necessarily mean that you're free to use it to pay the electric bill. There could be the board might have set funds aside for a certain purpose that can't actually be used for general operating, but would not fall under the technical definition of restricted because there's not a donor restriction. Donors are the only ones who are allowed to, you know, fully and legally bind a donation to a particular purpose. Boards, of course, can decide that they would not allow their administrator to use it for a certain purpose, but then the board has the opportunity to reverse that and so forth, so they're not technically considered restricted donations. On the other hand, there are also things called preferences. The easiest definition is that they're not restrictions. So preferences are when a board communicates to the organization that we would like for our money to be used in a certain way, but allows the organization to use it however they would like to use it. It allows much greater discretion and control by the organization. The donor communicates their wishes, but they grant the organization the ultimate authority to use the funds according to their discretion. Preferences do not restrict a gift. So a donor can say, I think it would be good for the ministry if you were to spend my money such and such a way, but it is up to you how you spend it. That is not a restriction. That is a preference. The biggest place where you'll see preferences versus restrictions is when you start talking about donations for the support of a particular missionary. So a donor can say, a donor cannot get a donation receipt if they say, I want my money to be used for this person's support. That's a personal gift to that individual. However, if they say, I would like my money to be used for the ministry that's being done by this ex-missionary, that is now a preference. They are restricting it to that particular area of ministry, but it is not a designation that it must be used for that individual. And my understanding is that creates a donation that can be deducted. Technical difference in the language, but there is a bit of a difference. And a lot of this comes down to three vital concepts that I would say have a lot of bearing on this conversation about restricted donations. First concept is discretion. So who decides what direction the ministry takes? Who decides what's best for the ministry? Who decides whether the donation is in the best interest of the ministry? Okay, these are some of the questions that need to be answered when you're thinking about discretion. The IRS says in order for a donation to be deductible, the organization needs to have at least a certain level of discretion over how the funds are used. That discretion must fall with the ministry, not with the donor. So, who decides what direction the ministry takes? Who decides what's best for the ministry? Who decides whether donation is in the best interest of the ministry? The concept of discretion. Control is the second concept. So, who makes the final decision regarding how funds are spent? And who has legal custody of the funds? How you answer these questions determines whether the organization has control and can exercise discretion over the gift, or whether the donor is keeping that control and discretion. If the donor has control over how the money is spent and, you know, specifically which person receives it and what direction the ministry goes and so forth, you end up with a situation For one, you end up with a poorly run nonprofit. For another, you end up with non-deductible gifts because these are now, they're essentially funds that the donor is spending. These are not funds that the ministry is spending. These are funds that the donor is spending. So discretion and control, those are the two biggest things I would say that the IRS looks at when they look at is a donation deductible or not. Who has discretion and control over the use of the funds? So some examples of IRS discretion and control. On the back of your handout, there is a list of 10 different items that the IRS does tend to look at. These are an excerpt from a letter that the IRS wrote from the Exempt Organizations Division back in 2000. This is a non-binding letter, which means you can't cite this as precedent. However, this is the IRS sort of giving you an inside window into what they are looking at when they, you know, address these questions of whether a donation is deductible or not. Who has discretion and control? And these are the types of things they look at. So, for example, the church or charity's governing body exercises control over designated funds through a budgetary process. So, is the church or the ministry actually passing a budget? Okay, if they are, that's evidence that they are now actually exercising control over how the funds are being spent. Does a governing body consistently establish, review, and monitor the programs and policies of the church or charity? Or the church or charity sets staff salaries, including maximum compensation, according to a salary schedule approved by the governing body or other appropriate body. Salaries are set in reference to considerations other than an amount of money raised by a deputized worker. There can be no commitment that contributions will be paid as salary or expenses with respect to a particular person. This particular one is addressing the question of if someone gives to a ministry for the benefit of one of the missionaries, is that okay? When can you deduct that as a donation? When must you consider it a personal gift to the recipient? And so, does the church or charity set the salary for these individuals and then pay them according to what they've agreed to? Or do they say, well, if the funds come in, you know, we'll pay you if enough money comes in that's restricted to you? If they're taking the latter approach, that would lead to the IRS saying, you're not actually operating, you're not exercising proper control and discretion over the use of the funds. You're allowing the donor to decide that, and so that would end up being a non-deductible contribution. So I'll let you read through those. This is sort of as a resource to you, looking at the types of things that the IRS looks at. It's always instructive when the IRS says, you know, we're not bound to this, but here's kind of what we look at. Okay, that's when I sit up and pay attention, because now they're telling us what they're probably going to be applying if they come out and do an audit on your organization or if they audit one of your donors. Here's the types of things that they're looking for, and that's always helpful to know in advance what they're going to be looking for. So we've looked at discretion. We've looked at control. The third concept I would mention is donor intent. This one gets much stickier because it can be difficult to determine what the donor's intent was. However, of course, the biggest question is what was intended when the donation was given. And does the donor have reason to believe the money will be used to benefit a specific individual or cause? So the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, ECFA, they say statements about the use of gifts by an organization in its charitable gift appeals must be honored. In other words, if you're making statements about how you're going to use the money that people give you, you have to do that. A giver's intent relates both to what was communicated in the appeal and to any instructions accompanying the gift, if accepted by the organization. Appeals for charitable gifts must not create unrealistic expectations of what a gift will actually accomplish. So they mention that intent goes both ways. Just because someone didn't include a note or put it in the memo line of their check saying, I want my money to be used in this way, does not mean there's now no donor intent. I'm sure you've all seen donations that come through from a particular person, and when it comes, you say, oh, I know what that's for. They don't mention what it's for. But when you receive it, you say, oh, yeah, one of our board members went to see him and talked to him about a particular need, and the man said he's going to send a donation for that. there's donor intent there. Okay, they didn't communicate that with their donation. And that's why I say it can be difficult to determine what was the donor's intent. And you might not get this perfectly, and you're not necessarily legally responsible to get it perfectly. However, as much as possible, it is an ethical issue where you do want to honor donor intent as much as possible. And if there is donor intent there, even if it's not specifically stated, it can cross the line of a personal gift. I'm not going to tell you exactly where that line is. It gets difficult, especially in a church context, where, yeah, you kind of know that this person gave to the fund because he knew that the fund is going to help out a certain person. How much you're responsible for that, you know, there's no bright line there as far as when that's okay and when it isn't. And so I unfortunately can't give you bulletproof answers as to what to do in all those cases. But if I were to apply these three concepts to the three questions that I ask at the beginning of the talk. So, there's a needy family in church who the church would like to set up a fund for someone, for people to be able to contribute to this fund. Is that okay? Well, my first question is, who has discretion and control over the money? Okay, so do you tell the person, do you tell the needy family that any funds that come in will be given to you? Do you tell the donor if you give to this fund, 100% of what you give will go, you know, straight to them? That, in my opinion, is problematic because that is not exercising discretion and control over how the funds are used. If, on the other hand, the church says, you know, as a church, we want to commit to helping this family, and so we are going to commit $2,000 a month comes from the church to this family. Okay, now the church goes to maybe other churches and says, and they say, we have this need. You know, would you like to contribute to this fund? The church is now exercising discretion and control over those funds because they are not giving out the exact amount that comes in as it comes in. On the other hand, they are saying, we're committing to this. We're going to pay this expense, whether the money comes in or not. If more comes in one month, less comes in the next month, doesn't matter. We're going to give the same amount. That would be my advice to churches in situations like this. Is there a way of structuring the plan in such a way that this is an expenditure of the church, and now people, individuals, can donate to help cover this expenditure? So someone sees someone in the church and says, I would like to give a gift to that person. Can I run it through the church? So here's a question I asked them. If the donor wasn't donating, would the church still help that need? Sometimes the answer is yes. So someone had a fire, you know, and we would like to help them rebuild their house. Can we run the money through the church? Well, the fact is, even if no one donated, the church would probably still, out of the general fund, help that person. Okay, so that's one question to ask. How much are you, again, it's discretion and control. How much are you exercising discretion and control over how the funds are used, or are you merely going by the donations that have come in? And again, who has discretion and control? Who has discretion and control over how the funds are used and how much is given to the person and so forth? Is that something that is directed by the donor, or is that something where the church is meeting that need and is committing to meet that need? Third question that I mentioned at the beginning, so donors send us checks to support our missionaries. Are these deductible donations? And I would say probably the biggest question I would have there is, are the donations restricted or preferenced? So if someone says, I would like the funds to go to the work done by this particular person, that's one thing. If they say, this money must go to this person, that's another thing. In my opinion, that's two sides. That's, you've crossed the line somewhere in between there. Now, you can be, there's gray area in between there, and exactly where that line is difficult to know sometimes. However, when at all possible, can you have the donor preference their gift for the work being done, you know, the work being done in India, and, you know, the missionary is in India, or things like that? There's nothing wrong with tracking where the money comes from, and even why you received the money. So if the donor wants to say, you know, I really appreciate the work that this person is doing over there, and so I'd like to give money toward that work, that's fine. And it's even fine to, in fact, I think it's good to keep track of why you got the money. So to keep track of, this is the amount of funds that this particular missionary raised, that's completely legitimate. That does not in any way endanger the deductibility of those gifts. Where you run into problems is where the person's salary is dependent on the amount of donations that you receive. And in that case, that can be problematic for the deductibility of the gift, because the question is, again, who's exercising control and discretion over those funds. There can be some issues with the preferences, though, and I would refer to a court case that I printed an excerpt from it on the back of your handout again. Is a donation a designation or a preference? In Tripp versus Commissioner, 1964, a taxpayer made a contribution to a college and identified the individual student whom he wished to benefit from the funds. The taxpayer stated, "I'm aware that a donation to a scholarship fund is only deductible if it is unspecified. However, if, in your opinion and that of the authorities, it could be applied to the advantage of Mr. Robert F. Roble, I think it would be constructive." The Seventh Circuit upheld the tax court ruling that the gift was not deductible. The court held that the intent to benefit a particular person precluded a contribution deduction, even though the person was unrelated to the taxpayer and the person might have been an appropriate scholarship recipient had the college used its own funds. So you can wind up in situations where, you know, what is the line between preference and designation can be difficult to know exactly how that works. But yes, again, if you can have your donors preference their funds for the work done by a certain person instead of designating it for that individual, can be helpful. So, I'd like to look at some legal issues now surrounding restricted donations. Like I mentioned, donor restrictions do create a legally binding requirement on the organization. Funds must be used according to the restriction or returned to the donor. And so, if you have a building project and someone said, "I want my money to go to that building project," and the building project doesn't use all the money, you have essentially two options. You can either, I guess you could expand the building project, I don't know, add fancier lights or something, you know, to use the funds, or you can send the money back. However, there's a third option that I would say you can take, and that's, can you renegotiate? So if you go back to the donor and you say, "I appreciate that you gave this large gift to our building fund. Our costs weren't as high as what we expected them to be. Can we redesignate your gift to general operating?" Not many donors are going to say, "No, I want my money back." In fact, I don't know of any. But that level of respect for their restriction does go a long way in earning respect with the earning trust of the donor. When you actually go back to them and say, "You know, we actually didn't need your funds for this. Can we use it for general operating?" Most of them are like, "Of course. That's why I sent it in. Like, I wanted it just to benefit the ministry. We're glad it didn't take it all for the building project." I will also say a lot of ministries will, on their appeals for funds, they will include a clause saying, if we receive more funds than what is needed for this particular need, we will use the rest where most needed. That is legitimate. In fact, that's a very good idea. It avoids these types of situations. My understanding is those are still considered restricted funds because they are preference for a need, but if the need is filled, those funds can then be directed to where most needed. However, bear in mind that donor restrictions do create a legally binding requirement. The principal portion of permanently restricted donations cannot be spent. So if you have funds where you are only allowed to use the interest, only the amount of interest can be spent from those donations. And I also mentioned that restricted donations are reported separately on the audit report and on the 990. So this is not something where, well, nobody will know about it unless they check up on you. No, actually, this is publicly available, how much of your net assets are restricted versus how much are unrestricted. And so we get into the question, can I borrow from restricted funds? have kind of a cash crunch this month. Can we just kind of borrow some and pay it back later? And the answer is no, because you do have a legally binding requirement to use the funds according to the donor's restrictions. Now, full disclosure, I probably shouldn't say this on a recording, but I have been in a ministry where they did borrow from funds, from restricted funds. Here were the caveats that I placed on that as to why I was somewhat okay with it. This particular ministry had a seasonal business. So they were making a lot of money. A lot of their funds actually come from the operations of the ministry. So only a certain portion of the ministry was funded from donations. A lot of their funding came from operations of the ministry. It was a very seasonal operation. So they were almost guaranteed to have the money in 2 months. They also had a line of credit that was open that was much greater than their current need that they could have drawn on. And so the only reason I was okay with borrowing, technically, from restricted donations was because they could have borrowed from their line of credit and paid interest. They could, quote, borrow from restricted funds and not pay interest. Probably is not a good idea. Need to be very, very careful with that. You can, like I mentioned, designated donations or restricted donations do show up on your 990. You could get yourself into a situation where you have more restricted donations than what you have money in the bank. That would not look good on your annual report. Not many donors would see it, but it's still something that's out there. You could actually potentially open yourself up to legal action if the wrong people would get a hold of that. So the answer is no. You can't borrow from designated donations. That's definitely the safest route. Ethical issues. There are times in nonprofits where something is legal, but it's not ethical. I'm sure you face that. And so our line as Christians especially cannot merely be what's legal. It must also be what's ethical, a step above what's legal. So one of the biggest things I look at is maintaining fundraising / communication integrity. How are you communicating with your donors, and are you using the funds that they sent the way they have reason to believe that you're going to be using them? So not only are you using the funds according to how they are specifying when they send you the donation that it must be used, you also are thinking about what is their goal in giving? Are there restrictions there that may not legally be restrictions, but it would be best if we were to go with that or honor that restriction that the donor intent. Again, donor intent is a big thing there when it comes to the ethics of how you handle donations. So what about special requests from donors? Someone says, I think this is something that your ministry should do. Here's the money to do it. How do you handle that? That's a question that has come up in several of the boards that I have consulted with. One of the questions, obviously, is who has discretion and control over the funds? I would also say that donors respect orderly organizations. So it doesn't feel good to say to a donor, I'm not sure if we can accept your donation. And most ministries would say, hang on, you're telling a donor what? They want to send money, send it. Well, donors do respect when you say, that kind of falls outside of what we do as an organization. Let me think about it and I'll get back to you. There are times when I think organizations should actually turn down donations because I'll get to this a bit later, but think about as a ministry, think about how can the kingdom of God best be furthered? So if your organization feeds orphans in Africa and you have someone saying, I think you ought to start a school in Haiti, well, those are two very different things. And to take the resources that we have, whether that's the board member expertise, whether that's the administrator's time, to take that and divert it into another project that, yeah, it's funded and it's a great project, it's a very worthy goal, are there people that can actually do this better than you can? Where's the point where you would say, you know, that organization is doing exactly what you want us to do. I think you ought to give to them. Does your organization have enough trust in the overall kingdom of God that you could do that? Sometimes we kind of get the idea that, well, we do it better than they do. And so, you know, yeah, give to us because, yeah, they're already doing it, but I bet we could do it better. Where's the point where we actually tell the donor, no, actually give to them? I think the kingdom of God would be better served if you were to give channel your funds in that direction. So, you know, donors respect orderly organizations that know what their purpose is. I would also say that board members can be as susceptible to urgent or glitzy projects as donors. I've sat in board meetings where board members are doing the same thing. They're saying, hey, I think we ought to do such and such a project, and I'm willing to go raise the funds for it. It's hard for the rest of the board to say, no, I don't think we ought to do that. Because if the money's there, why wouldn't you do it? The money's always a problem, isn't it? The money, well, between money and personnel. And if those are there, why wouldn't you do it? However, like I mentioned, donors do respect orderly organizations. Do you know why you're doing what you're doing? Do you know what your purpose is? And can you stick to that? So now we get into non-deductible gifts. Not going to talk much about this. However, I have occasionally experienced this with some of the ministries that I work with where a donor will say, I know I can't get a donation receipt for this, but I want to do it anyway. Why would they do that? Well, one reason could be if they want to give an anonymous gift to an individual. So someone in the church says, I'd like to give to someone else in the church, but I don't want them to know where it came from. Can I run it through the church? Not a good idea. I mean, you can do cash. There's other ways of making gifts anonymous, but you can do some of that. Don't know there's anything legally wrong with doing that. What about fund transfers facilitated by the ministry? So where I've seen this more often is someone will say, okay, there's this missionary over in, you know, another country where we'd like to give them a gift. We know that you have ways of getting the money over there. Can we run the money through the organization just to get it over there? If you do decide to accept it, I'm not necessarily recommending that you do, but if you do accept it, make sure you clearly communicate on the receipt that this is a non-deductible gift. This is not a gift that they can get a tax deduction for. It should also be tracked in your books as a liability, not as a donation and an expense. In other words, these are not funds that belong to your organization. And so when the funds are deposited, you should be depositing them as a liability, not as donations. A tracking difference in your software, but it is a big deal because these are not donations to your organization. They are liabilities that must be paid out in the manner specified. I don't necessarily recommend giving non-deductible gifts or accepting them, but it is something that sometimes missions are asked if they'd be willing to do. Beware of processing fees if you do this. So, someone donates to the ministry by credit card and then wants you to give the money to someone as a non-deductible gift, you're paying credit card processing fees. So just be aware of that. Pass it through to the giver. No reason why an organization should have to pay money to facilitate non-deductible transfers that don't benefit the ministry. So just something to be aware of. Preservation of mission focus. I touched on this briefly earlier. Is this gift good for the ministry? Will our use of this gift accomplish the goals intended by the donor? This is probably a bigger one. Like I mentioned before, is our ministry positioned in such a way that we can actually make use of the donation in an efficient manner, in a way that that will accomplish the goals that the donor has by contributing these funds? And is this gift in the best interest of the kingdom of God? Are there times when we need to say no to a donation? In fact, I I don't remember the specifics, but I remember hearing a story a number of years ago where a minister was approached by a donor who said, you know, we've inherited a large inheritance from our parents. We'd like to donate it to your ministry. And it was, as I recall, it was a seven-figure number, large donation. And the ministry was actually of a size that could have probably absorbed that large of a donation and maybe would have, you know, used it over several years. But was a very sizable organization. The organization actually went back to the donor and said, we actually think it would be in your best interest to spread it out. When I heard that, I said, okay, that's a ministry I can support. That's a ministry who's looking out for the kingdom of God, who's looking out for the donor, not just, yeah, it's money, you want to give it? Sure, send it. Our ministry is not the most important thing. The most important thing is that the kingdom of God be built. And a ministry like that gets a lot of respect from donors. And so, is this gift best in the best interest of the kingdom of God? What questions do you have? I'm sure you've faced situations maybe similar to some that I've brought up. Are there questions that you have that you would like addressed? What has been your experience with that? Back.
So, it's going back to the designated donations and control. Mm-hmm. So, what about a situation where a church or a ministry authorizes, you know, we'll spend up to a certain amount on this, but we'll only spend it if we get donations for this in particular. Whether it's, you know, we'll pay this hospital bill if we get enough there, we're not touching general funds, mm-hmm. or even some aspects of workers' payroll gets handled like that sometimes, mm-hmm. where we'll pay up to this amount if the money comes in. Right. Is that okay? Are there tricky parts there?
That could be kind of a difficult one in that the amount paid out is directly linked to the amount that comes in. Like I mentioned, you know, it does get to be problematic. My argument there is that the ministry is still exercising discretion and control because they're saying this is a need that we would like to meet. We think it's a legitimate need. If we raise the funds, we'll channel them that direction. Where I would have more of a problem with that is if the donor is saying, hey, would you be willing to do this? The church says, yeah, if you want to raise the money, sure, we'll do that. That to me would feel different than who originates the idea, frankly, is in my mind is a big deal. Is this something that the donor comes up with? Is this something that the church comes up with? I can't give you a definite answer there. I don't know that there's necessarily a bright line, but my question there, another question would be what happens if the funds are over the amount that's needed? Do they get returned to the donor? Do they get passed on? Or do they get used as general operating? Now, if they get used as general operating, they get used for other medical needs. To me, that would also be an indication that they are exercising discretion and control over the use of the funds. So, excellent question. Yes?
What about gifts to, like, let's say a gift comes for the pastor, and you do support the pastor a minimal amount, and so now somebody wants to give above and beyond that. Is that acceptable?
To designate it for a specific pastor, probably not. To say I'd like to give this for the support of the pastors, that would be much closer. I would probably feel okay with that. Simply because you're helping to support the church by supporting its pastors. And so to me, giving and saying I'd like it to go for the support of the pastors feels a lot like saying I'd like it to go for the work of, you know, the work of the church being done by these people would feel very different. Being designated to a specific pastor, I'd say probably not. But it's like I was just telling someone recently, there's nothing wrong with giving a non-deductible gift. You know, we sometimes get the idea that, well, if I can't get a donation receipt, well, maybe I won't give it. Wait, hang on. Is that why you're giving? Are you giving because you can get a tax deduction? And if you can, well, God bless you for giving, but it's a pretty shallow reason. Are you giving because you believe in the ministry? And if you do, wouldn't you give even if you didn't get a donation receipt? So that would probably be part of my response there. Why are you giving? You know, how important is it, I guess, for the donor? I see a hand over here.
If you have a donation that, for whatever reason, kind of a follow-up to the first question here, you decide that it's going to go to a specific person, is that payroll taxable.
Hmm. So if you have a donation that goes to a specific person or a, yeah, is that payroll taxable?
Is there a difference whether it's a deductible or a non-deductible versus payroll tax when it goes back out?
Right. So why is the money being given to the individual? That's my question. That's my question when people ask about you know, payroll, or is it a gift, or what is it? Why is it being given to the person? Is it being given to the person because their house burned down? You don't need to run that through payroll tax. That's part of the church's mission to alleviate poverty. Completely fine. Is it being given because the person did work for the church? Okay, now you have money that is given because of someone doing work for someone else. That's pretty much the definition of taxable compensation. Whether that's a 1099 or you're withholding taxes or whatever, somebody needs to pay tax on that. So, you know, is there a difference whether it's deductible or not? I don't really think so. And where that gets even more sticky is where you have overseas workers or you have other ministry workers that people are giving them money, or the church is giving them money and so forth. Is this income for that person, or is it gifts to that person? And my question is, why'd they get the money? So we do a lot of income taxes, and we have missionaries who say, well, you know, I had this, the church gave me this amount, and then I got this much more from individuals. Okay, so what's taxable? I say it's all taxable. Okay, the reason they gave the money is because of the work you did. So the definition of compensation is essentially money that is received for work that's performed. And so if, because of the work you're doing, you're receiving these funds, I say they're taxable. If, on the other hand, grandma sends you a birthday gift, I don't care if you're in Africa or if you're in Pennsylvania, she's probably going to send you a gift. She might have made it larger because you're doing mission work, but who cares? It had to do with grandma, and it had to do with your birthday. It didn't have to do with the work that you're doing. And so in that case, those are non-deductible gifts. But for, you know, someone who's receiving funds, even if they're termed gifts for work that they're performing, I say they're taxable, would be my interpretation. Question?
You meant non-taxable, or you said non-deductible gift. The grandma that gives for the birthday, that would not be a taxable gift for the recipient, or would it?
No. No, that would not be – I'm sorry. Thank you. It would be a non-taxable. It would also be non-deductible for grandma. But, it would be non-taxable to the recipient. Thank you for clarifying that.
What about the donation of commodities? You ever run into that where people have the elevator write the check to an individual as a gift?
You know, I haven't actually run into that specifically. I guess my question is the question coming from the standpoint of the person donating the commodity, or is the question coming from the standpoint of the person getting the check?
Third party looking on.
For the third party looking on, make judgments and throw stones. Isn't that what third parties are for? No, I'm kidding. I would say my personal opinion, without knowing all the facts of the case, would be that it's a personal gift on behalf of the person donating it, and it is a probably compensation for the person receiving it, if it's because of work that they did. Where the deduction question gets really sticky is because that person, I'm assuming, probably the farmer, is not writing it off as a charitable donation. It's just part of business expenses. And so, you know, this is just income that he didn't get. However, that is a problem. The way that the donor is supposed to be treating that is that the cost to them of raising that wheat would be considered either a donation or a personal expense if you're just giving it to a person. And so that gets to be an issue because it's very, very difficult for the IRS, for example, to catch that, because this is simply money that didn't come in. So how do they know about that? It's an ethical thing. In my opinion, it's being dishonest on taxes if you simply take it as a business expense when it is not a legitimate it's not a legitimate business expense because it's a donation, should be treated as a donation, but it can't be a donation because it's a gift to an individual. It's not okay to not separate that out from your expenses, in my opinion. Are there additional questions? Yes.
From a church perspective, as a deacon, does it make a difference? I pretty much make all the decisions as far as what to do with finances. From a legal perspective, should there be more people involved in making those decisions, or is that okay?
That's a good question. Okay, here's where I would go with that. Who gives you the authority to make the decision? Well, ultimately, the church does. I mean, the church has ordained you.
The ministry, and so
for an organization to authorize an individual to make decisions is fine. For an organization to say our administrator is going to make we're going to give him discretion over how to disperse income that comes in for a particular fund or something, that's fine. It would be best practice to probably be best practice to at least have people, you know, seeing reports or overseeing the finances. So there's some things like that, and I suppose you have some of that in place.
Yeah.
But, you know, who makes the decision? I would go back to who authorized the person to make those decisions, probably with that. So, excellent questions. We're getting close to the end of our time here. I wanted to point out just a few best practices that I would say. One is to allow donations for certain types of work, but not for individuals. I mentioned this before. Donors should be saying, I want my money to go to the work being done by this person, rather than saying, I want my money to go to that person. Establish a budget prior to accepting donations for a project. So if you say, you know, we're going to commit to a certain amount of money, my opinion, even if you say we'll do it as the funds come in, that still feels very different than saying, oh, we got this money. Well, now let's spend it in this way. Is this something where you are exercising control over it by setting a budget, establishing a budget prior to accepting donations for the project? Don't vary payments to workers based on donations preference for that individual. So when at all possible, have a fixed budget that we're going to pay them a certain amount. Now, if the ministry decides, you know, we received a lot of funds this year, we're going to give bonuses to all our people, terrific. Your people will appreciate it. It's wonderful. And, you know, nothing wrong with doing that. Businesses give bonuses all the time. So that's not a problem. But so that's something you can do. If you're using QuickBooks, I know a lot of you use QuickBooks for tracking this. I just wanted to briefly give some tips here. I would advise using bank subaccounts to track restricted fund balances. So you end up with, you know, this much money in the bank. You can have separate bank accounts if you want, but subaccounts of that bank account can be used to track those donations or to track those fund balances. You can also use class tracking to track income and expense by fund. So if you have a particular need in the church that you want to track how much came in, how much went out, you can use class tracking to do that. However, class tracking does not work for asset purchases, for balance sheet items. And so if you're spending money on large asset purchases, restricted funds, when you run a class report in QuickBooks, those expenses don't show up because they're balance sheet. They're not profit and loss accounts. Apologize. That might have been accountant's jargon that none of you got into. If you have questions on it, give me a call or send me an email. My contact information is on here. Also have it on the bottom of your handout. Feel free to send me an email or give me a call. Would also point out a couple of resources on the bottom of your handout, the back of your handout. One of them that is very helpful, that I have found very helpful in this regard, is put out by ECFA. It's called the Charitable Gift Guide for Missionaries and Other Workers. They get into a lot of the questions about what can you do as far as designations versus preferences. This book is sort of an excerpt of this larger book, The Guide to Charitable Giving. If you want to go the whole way and get the real manual, here you go. This will address all your questions and probably more. But yeah, I'd highly recommend. They're excellent resources. Let me see. There's also one from the IRS. This particular one, publication 1828, is very helpful for just generally how to operate your organization in the eyes of the IRS. I was at an IRS conference one time when the presenter said, if you have a it's, you know, the tax guide for churches and religious organizations. If you're, he said, if you're a church or a religious organization, this is your Bible. And then he realized what he had said, and he's like, well, okay, maybe not for churches and religious organizations, but you get the point. So IRS has a high opinion of this publication. Thank you for attending this afternoon, and turn it back over to Jonathan.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769. Or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.